to the last case of the morning. It's Andre Johnson versus Donald Snyder. Mr. Moore.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Craig Moore. I've had the honor and privilege of being appointed to represent Andre Johnson and his claims against Donald Snyder and the Illinois Department of Corrections. I think before I begin my presentation, it's important for me to address a case that counsel submitted to this court that addresses a similar issue that was decided just about 2 weeks ago. Counsel submitted this case on Monday, and it is entitled Johnson v. Daugherty, and it was actually authored by two of the members of this panel, and it's easily distinguishable from the facts at hand. In that case, Johnson in that case brought his Eighth Amendment claims, and he was subject to or had a hernia, and had been diagnosed by three different doctors that this hernia was treatable without surgery, and his claims were for the fact that he didn't get treatment for the surgery. In this case, the case presently before the court, Mr. Johnson is an amputee. His left leg is gone above the knee, and he had not been diagnosed by three doctors that said he didn't need treatment. In fact, he had been diagnosed by two previous doctors saying that he was to be allowed his cane indefinitely. And the doctor, when he finally got to Menard, decided that he did not need that cane.
That was an established injury and disability or whatever before he entered the prison, right?
Yes.
I don't want to say it didn't exist, obviously, but it was stabilized to whatever it was.
He lost his leg at age 22 in a motorcycle accident. It was before he was incarcerated. When he came to the Illinois Department of Corrections, he first entered the Joliet Correctional Facility and then was transferred to Statesville. At each of those institutions, he was allowed to keep his crutch and was provided assistance in showering, bathing, basically everything that a handicapped individual would need to go day-to-day in his incarceration. When he was transferred to Menard, a Dr. Kumar independently decided that he didn't need this anymore, took it away from him, and he was given pretty much the option of either you go into segregation or you don't get a crutch. Given the option of going into segregation, losing commissary privileges and church privileges and general privileges of prison life, as limited as they may be, he took the option of going back into general population with merely his prosthetic leg. There's testimony by Mr. Johnson, or affidavit testimony, that if given only his prosthetic leg, he becomes unstable, falls, can injure himself, which is fairly evident. It seems to be fairly evident that when one has an amputation of above the knee, it's very likely that could happen. And throughout his incarceration, or after the crutch was taken from him, there's documented occurrences where he fell on numerous occasions, especially coming in and out of the shower. And he repeatedly requested from all the defendants that he be given his crutch back, that he be given some sort of help. Menard is not ADA compliant, so there was no rails in the shower. There was nothing to help him, assist him, prop himself up when he was taking a shower.
There was no ADA claim as a part of this complaint, though, was there?
Not originally, no. There's no ADA claim as part of his original petition.
So this is all under the Eighth Amendment?
Yes, it is.
And I know there's an awful lot of discussion about ADA standards and reasonable accommodation and all that stuff, but we're talking about cruel and unusual punishment here.
Yes, it is. And I think
deliberate indifference, at least.
The deliberate indifference, yes. The deliberate indifference, if there's a serious medical, prison officials are violated in the Eighth Amendment if they've established a deliberate indifference to a serious medical need. Here, that serious medical need it's tied into the ADA because he needed this crutch because the place was not ADA compliant. There was nothing to support him or help him through the day without this, to help his serious medical need. So he had to go without it. The ADA there's not a specific ADA claim per se, but those factors tie in.
Now, he could have kept the crutch if he didn't go into the general population at Menard, which is a high, whatever they call it, prison.
Yes, it's
a lot of bad guys there, and they don't like people with crutches because they'll use them as weapons, or maybe could get a hold of one and use it as a weapon. So they have some reason, at least, not to have those kinds of things out in the general population. Now, he had that choice, and I understand that he'd rather be in the general population. So was he assuming some sort of a risk here that he...
I don't think... they have that policy, but there were other people there who were allowed to keep a crutch.
In general population?
In general population. That's his testimony in his affidavit, that he was told he couldn't keep it, or if he did, he would have to go into segregation. But there were other inmates there that were allowed to keep it. And he had been allowed to keep it at the other two places, both Joliet and Statesville, which are both maximum security facilities, because they saw that he needed this crutch.
Now, is he in a maximum security facility now?
It's my understanding he's no longer in a maximum security facility. He's been transferred to, I think, Big Muddy. It may be Pinckneyville.
He's got his crutch back.
He's actually in a wheelchair now, is my understanding. So it kind of shows that he wasn't faking it. He didn't need this. As far as continuing violations, I think that has been addressed. He is now receiving the treatment he needs. These claims are for the treatment that he received when he was at Menard, which was admittedly for a fairly limited period. Maybe not limited in the general scheme of his incarceration, but as far as for the extent of the pain and suffering he had, it was a long time to go through that. Something that I think is important to address under this court's precedent is the degree to which deliberate indifference is shown is sometimes and often a function of how much the medical care would cost. If there's a very cheap alternative to eliminate the pain and suffering, then the standard for deliberate indifference decreases. Here, all that you needed to do is give them back the cane that he already had. It was not a huge thing. Or even if they didn't want to give him the cane back for the alleged security or safety reasons, they could have installed handrails or guardrails in the prison showers, which there's testimony by prison officials that they admit that would not have been a very substantial thing or a large problem for them to take care of. They could have done it easily. They knew that he was falling. They even went so far as to give him a chair at one point, but it was inadequate. It fell. So to me, that shows that they knew there was a problem. They attempted to address it. When that failed the first time they tried to put a chair there, they did nothing further and let him suffer.
That kind of cuts both ways, though. Try to ameliorate the situation, that's inconsistent with being deliberately indifferent to it.
I would agree with you, except for the fact that they never did anything further. They recognized there was a problem. They provided a chair. The chair fell, and they threw up their hands. They did nothing further. By providing the chair...
He's a very heavy guy.
He's, my last count, 270 pounds and missing a leg. So, yeah, he's a pretty big guy. They could have provided two chairs. They could have provided a concrete bench. There's memos throughout the case that show that they said should do something else, but they never did it. And in fact, there's memos from the director and the ARB that, well, we think this is moot because they will provide another chair. Well, they never did. They started to. They never did anything further for him, and they let him suffer. They let him walk and fall, and there's really nothing more he could do, but there was a lot more they could do, and they could have done it cheaply. If nothing else, just give him the crutch that he brought to the prison with him. I think I'll save my rest for rebuttal.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Welch?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm here on behalf of the State Defendant. Your Honors, this is a simple case of failure of proof. And I think the Johnson case that counsel referred to proves this. What you have to do in a case like this when you have multiple defendants and multiple claims is to deconstruct the claim, each claim and each defendant. Now, here there are three claims. There's the denial of the access to the cane, there's the denial of transfer out of Menard, and there's the denial of safe shower conditions. So those are the three claims, and they're against five defendants. Now, the access to the crutch claim comes from Dr. Kumar's diagnosis that plaintiff didn't need his crutch. And there, none of the five defendants here is a medical professional. So none of them really, there's nothing in the record that indicates that they have the power to override Dr. Kumar's diagnosis in this case. And again, as the court noted earlier, Mr. Johnson was given a choice. If he felt, contrary to the doctor's diagnosis, that he wanted to have the crutch, that it was necessary for him, then he had the option of going to segregation. So there, and none of these defendants.
That's not a very good option.
Well, it's not a good option, but it's certainly not the preferable option. But it's not none of the defendants here. He never asked any of the defendants here about keeping his crutch. There's no evidence in the record about that. He asked Dr. Feinerman, who's not a defendant anymore, who's not on a, you know, an
by the way, is that Dr. Adrian Feinerman?
Yeah.
Is he related to the Solicitor General of Illinois?
As a matter of fact, he is, Your Honor. It's a first cousin once removed, something like that.
All those Feinermans are all related.
They're all over the state, Your Honor. So only Dr. Feinerman is implicated. Dr. Kumar and Dr. Feinerman are implicated in the access to the crutch issue here. And so there's no person, you have to have personal involvement in a 1983 case, and there's no personal involvement, no indication that the plaintiff said to any of these five defendants at any time, I need my crutch for stability. And in fact, Dr. Kumar's diagnosis is to the contrary. So with regard to the second claim then, the transfer to or from Menard, there's no evidence in the record to show that any of the five defendants here had any authority in transfer decisions. And in fact, the evidence is undisputed that it's the transfer coordinator that had sole responsibility for determining transfer decisions. So again, none of the five individual defendants here can be held liable for the transfer, which did in fact occur in January. So now, and he had, this is what he asked for in his grievance. Remember also in his grievance, plaintiff Mr. Johnson didn't ask to have his crutch back. He didn't say, I was given this choice, a bad choice, to go to segregation or not have my crutch. He never said those things. What he said was, there was a bad, you know, I got a chair in the shower, the chair collapsed. And remember, this chair is the kind of chair that's used throughout the prison. So apparently, it was the reasonable inference is that it was just this particular chair, the legs were bent and so on, that was inadequate, because these are the chairs that are used, these are the only chairs that are used in the prison and the dining halls and so on. So this chair is the, you know, this chair, the shower conditions are the third issue here. And so what plaintiff said is either I want a better chair or I want grab bars. So the grab bar, however, would have to be on the wall, and as the court might recall from I believe it's document 104, which was the state's response to the motion to reconsider the judgment, the entry of summary judgment, there's a diagram which shows that the wall on which the grab bars would be placed was 5.5 feet away from the overhead showers. So that's the only wall, because the showers are you know, overhead. So, and that's as far as I am tall. So a grab bar 5.5 feet away from a shower head really isn't going to be of any assistance to someone who wants to be showering. Now, and then let's go through each defendant. And what the evidence shows here is that each defendant responded responsibly within his or her authority to plaintiff's complaint when that defendant was made aware of it. Now, you know, first we have McAdory, who was the assistant warden, who was the ADA coordinator. And as soon, the evidence shows that the first time he heard of the any problem with plaintiff in the shower was he was asked for information in October by the grievance counselor. And so what he did, McAdory responsibly sent word to the defendant Grubman, the HCU, the healthcare unit administrator, and said, what can you tell me about this guy? So, and Grubman herself sent back information within a week. Yes, he has a problem. Yes, he has limited mobility. He has a prosthesis. Dr. Kumar said he doesn't have a crutch, but here's a suggestion. How about a concrete bench? How about a chair bolted to the ground? Because remember, this is a maximum security prison, and so you can't have, the same reason you can't have a crutch, you can't have metal chairs, you can't have objects that inmates might use to throw at each other, to break down for weapons, to hide contraband. You have to be very careful. That's why, you know, there are overhead shower heads, for example. Okay, so McAdory responded responsibly to the grievance. He recommended denying the grievance because Frazier said that he would supply a stronger chair. And Defendant Frazier's testimony, which occurs only in the motion to reconsider. In fact, the plaintiff did not respond at all to Frazier's motion for summary judgment. So he's forfeited the right to challenge summary judgment against Frazier. But the post-judgment record shows that Defendant Frazier says, as soon as I heard about the problem, I called either the housekeeping or the sergeant and told them, there's a problem here, you need to fix it. Whatever chair had been supplied, and we don't know who supplied the chair, that evidence isn't in the record, the first chair, you need to take care of this. And he reasonably relied on his staff to do that because, as he said, if there's still a problem, I always hear about it again. It comes back to me. So Frazier responded responsibly. Grubman responded responsibly. McAdory responded responsibly. And Snyder, Director Snyder, responded responsibly because all he heard was a letter from the plaintiff toward the end of December which said, I have a problem, I want to transfer. And he denied the grievance because he knew that the plaintiff was being transferred. So when you deconstruct plaintiff's three claims and you look at each particular defendant and how that particular defendant, not they, not appellees, not defendants, but when you look at every single defendant and what that defendant did, that defendant acted reasonably, and that's the responsibly in response. And that's what the Eighth Amendment requires. It doesn't require that you necessarily fix it. It requires that what you do is a responsible reaction to a problem that you're made aware of. And here, that's exactly what happened. And that's why the judgment on behalf of the defendant should be affirmed. Unless there are any questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Moore.
There's a couple points I'd like to make in response to counsel's argument. First is, in regards to Dr. Kumar's diagnosis that he didn't need a crutch, the deliberate indifference standard is either that they're acting in opposition to a physician's diagnosis, or if the injury or condition is such that it would be obvious to a layperson. Well, in this instance, we have both, actually. Because there were physicians' diagnoses that the two prior prisons, both Joliet and Statesville, that he should keep his crutch indefinitely. And also, frankly, Mr. Johnson had no leg above the knee. That's obvious to a layperson. In both situations, although Dr. Kumar's diagnosis was flatly wrong, it doesn't matter in regards to the Eighth Amendment violation because anybody could tell that Mr. Johnson needed assistance. As far as each of the five defendants, they stand on their, well, we thought we were going to do something, we tried to do something, we said we were going to do something. The fact is none of them actually ever did do anything. Now, I don't think they can get by liability by just saying that, well, we thought we were going to do it and we never did anything to make sure it happened. Not one person made sure anything happened outside of him actually getting transferred some substantial time later. Nobody ever made sure that a stronger bench was in place, that a chair was in place, that a railing was put up. Counsel, and I agree with her, a railing on the side of the wall would have done nothing at all because it was too far away. But at any time, they could have put a railing in the middle of the floor. They could have established a bench, a concrete bench, that any of the things that they suggested as far as solutions would have worked, but they didn't do any of them. See, my time's out if you have any questions.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement. You mentioned you were appointed?
Yes.
Was this pro bono?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much for taking the assignment. That ends the arguments for today. This case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.